The excitement is mounting over the imminent return of steelmaking to Teesside. The blast furnace is due to be relit on January the 6th, with the first slab emerging a few days later. All this week, we're looking back at some of the most significant moments in the history of steelmaking. So let's start with David McMillan putting on his winter boots, climbing up the Eston Hills to look into the origins of the industry.
If you'd climbed up here 160-odd years ago, you would probably have had no idea you were standing on the substance that would transform the communities below. Because it was the discovery of iron ore here in the Eston Hills that fueled the iron-making industry Teesside is built on. So let's believe it's the 1830s. Below us, on this side of the Steel River, the first sparks that transformed Teesside were being lit. On the north side of the Tees, an invention that changed the world, passenger railway, had just been pioneered. What an extraordinary time it must have been to be here. Now, the first blast furnace in the region was purportedly built in 1577 in Revo Abbey, of all places, but it was in 1841 that this region really started to take shape. John Vaughan and Henry Balco opened an ironworks on what was then the port town of Middlesbrough. Then, 9 years later, iron ore was discovered in these hills. The truth is that a well-known engineer called John Marley was employed, probably at great expense, to trace the seam that ran all the way from the North Yorkshire coast. But it's been said that if it's a choice between fact and legend, print the legend. So, John Vaughan was out on this ground, walking his dog and merrily shooting rabbits when he tripped over a huge lump of iron stone. Either way, boosted by a hunger for iron from the rapidly expanding railways, the industry took off. Within a few years, the river was lined with works. The population of Middlesbrough rose from 25 in 1800 to 20,000 in 1860. And soon the metal made by melting and shaping the contents of these hills was being used in landmark buildings and bridges across the globe. Tens of thousands of people were employed when the industry was in its prime. And you can imagine old men walking the hills now with their grandson, observing the scene, sucking on a fisherman's friend and declaring, "When I were a lad, all this were foundries." Now, the only significant landmark that remains on the horizon from days gone by is the dusky Dorman Long Stack, but the legacy can be seen everywhere. Middlesbrough itself was created by the coal and rail companies. Dorman's town is the settlement built for steelworkers. There's the Dorman Museum, there's Albert Park, and even the very town of Saltburn, which leapt from the imagination of Henry Pease on a walk along the coast to see his railway building brother Joseph. And now, steelmaking is about to resume in Redcar and train building is returning to County Durham. What an extraordinary time it is to be here. Well, that's the end of Chapter 1. And if you felt this deserved a little bit more fanfare, don't worry, because there's going to be plenty of bombast tomorrow.
They were grim days, but in Sydney, the outlook was brightened by the completion of the mighty Harbour Bridge, begun in 1923, the largest arch bridge in the world. It was March 19th. More than 200,000 Sydneyites and visitors converged on the structure, conceived by Australian Dr. J. Bradfield and built by Dorman Long of England at a cost of £9 million.